Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
It is so true. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and you can listen to my other podcasts and read my writings about politics and 20 percenters and the Iraq War and all of it at my website, andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us, as in the United States, because we're patriots here, dang it. Okay, let's go back to Karl Rove and the Karl Rove legacy. So he's leaving at the end of the month. Old Turd Blossom is going back to Texas. And I think he's getting out while the getting's good. There's a train wreck coming in 2008 for the Republicans, and no reason for his reputation to be sullied, because it won't really be his fault. At this point, things have gotten away. On the other hand, there's a way in which it is his fault. And this is worth talking about for a minute. Here's the problem I have with Karl Rove. Now, it's probably true of most political operatives, you know, James Carville or whoever, but Rove, more than most of them, has practiced the politics of, have practiced wedge politics. That is, you pick an issue that you think you can divide the electorate on, but you can come out ahead. Right? Perfect example, in the 2004 election, they played up gay marriage big. Right? They said, oh, Boston's had this ruling, or Massachusetts has had this ruling, and you have to worry about gay marriage. Now, we're at war, remember. We've got the war on terror, we're in Iraq, and one of the big, big issues they bring up to scare people is gay marriage. So, right before the election, Bush endorses a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. You know, that's never going to pass, and he knew it. But this stuff has Rove's fingerprints all over it. And I think in the various states they introduced, and by they I mean Republicans, introduced in like 17 states, I believe there were ballot initiatives to ban gay marriage. Well, what that does is when you have a ballot initiative, you can drive people to the poll. So maybe you were thinking of going to vote for Bush or and Cheney, and maybe you weren't. But when they put an anti-gay marriage on, you say, you know, honey, we better get over to the polls because that gay marriage ballot is on there. We don't want that to pass. We don't want to approve gay marriages. We got to disapprove gay marriages. So that was just one example of wedge politics, right? But Rove is a master of wedge politics. The other thing is he's a master of playing to the base, because playing to the base is the way that wedge politics works. You pick an issue that you believe will divide the other side and force them into some tough decisions, and it's also an issue where you believe the majority of the country is with you. So there are other examples, but let me go back to 2002. You know, Hillary's taken a lot of heat, and in fact Barack Obama is now, every chance he gets, saying about all the senatorial candidates on the podium with him, on the platform with him. That's Biden, Hillary, Obama's a senator, but he wasn't in the Senate to vote on the Iraq War resolution in 2003, and Chris Dodd, I guess. They're the other three senators besides Obama. And they all voted for, I think they all voted, Joe Biden. Did I say Biden? Yeah. They all voted for the war. But Obama's given him a hard time about it. But remember what the Bush administration did and what Karl Rove did. And I'm giving Karl Rove credit for being behind this. They chose to force the Congress to vote on authorization to do whatever they needed to do against Saddam Hussein before the election. They forced that vote in, was it late September, early October? I believe it was early October, October 2nd or something of 2002. And the Democrats wanted to focus on other issues. They wanted to focus on domestic issues. This is only a year after 9/11. And so this was an issue that works very well for Bush. They raised the specter of the mushroom cloud all summer long, the drumbeat to war, as it's been called, right? And they said, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud over an American city. And then they forced Congress to vote right before the election. And they got 75 out of 100 senators to give Bush the authority to do what he needed to do in Iraq after he went to the United Nations. Well, we all know what happened. He pretended to go to the United Nations. He faked left and went right. I mean, he did go to the United Nations, but when they said, no, no, we don't agree with you, we're not going to give you what you want, he said, well, I'll have to act to enforce the United Nations resolutions. No, that's not how it works. Your father showed you how it works. You build a coalition. And they didn't. So that's an example in a way of wedge politics, too, where it's really just unilateralism. But going for this vote right before the election, that's got Roe's fingerprints on it, I believe, and maybe Cheney's, and maybe Bush's. But contrast that with what Bush's father did in 1990, when it was time to go into Kuwait and throw Saddam out of Kuwait. Bush built a coalition of, I think it was more than 100 countries, but at least 50 countries gave money, 52 countries or something gave money and or troops. And we had most of the Arab countries with us. Just a couple didn't go with us on this. And Bush built a real coalition. But when it came time to ask Congress to vote on it, he said, I'm not going to put this right before the 1990 election to pressure people. I want it to be a vote of conscience. And he held that off until January after the elections were over. Now that's a statesman, as opposed to a crass politician. So that's a piece of Rove's approach. And then I'll just give a couple more examples here. In the 2000 campaign, really in 1999, John McCain was coming on strong. You know, if you recall back, George W. Bush was anointed by the Republicans. I've said this on the show before, that Republican Party should be held responsible for not vetting George W. Bush properly. Right? Bush sat out most of the primaries. He didn't go through those debates, the early debates, where some of his weaknesses would have shown. Instead, he stayed down in Texas and said, I have to govern down here. I'm busy. Well, Texas has one of the weakest governorships in the country. It's a very weak office. The governor doesn't have that much power in Texas. But he used it as an excuse not to debate. He got in the race late, but by then, everybody had, a lot of the people in Washington, the Republican power bases, had already decided Bush was their guy. And they'd already given him a lot of money. He ended up being this great fundraiser because people said, this is someone who's electable. He's conservative. He's got the degrees from Ivy League schools, but he's lived in Texas most of his life. He's more of a Texan than his father was. He's got that Texas twang. He's got the down-home style. He's a good-looking guy. He's a fundamentalist Christian and can speak that language to the religious base of the Republican Party. They decided he was electable early on, and they threw money at him and essentially wired the Republican primaries for him. They made it easy for him to get a path to the nomination. They didn't count on the maverick John McCain rising up. McCain wins the New Hampshire primary in 99. I'm sorry, in 2000. Then they go on to South Carolina, and this is where Karl Rove comes in. There were dirty tricks played down there. There were essentially, I think there were two of them, but they used push polling. Now, push polling is calling people on the phone to ask them a leading question. You're not really interested in the answer. You're planting negative information that may even not be true. In most cases, it isn't. So one of the push polls called up and said, would you be as willing to vote for John McCain if you knew that he had had an illegitimate black baby? Well, McCain and his wife adopted, was it a Vietnamese baby or a black baby? I forget. But this was made up. This was phony. They savaged McCain's reputation. The other thing is there was a whispering campaign in South Carolina. McCain has been known to show a flash of temper, as I think all powerful people do from time to time. They want their way. When they don't get it, or somebody crosses them, they let them have it. So they may yell or scream or just show anger occasionally. McCain's had has a reputation for being willing to show his temper occasionally. Well, what the Bush campaign did in South Carolina was they started a whispering campaign and said, you know, McCain's kind of a loose cannon here. And of course, he spent 6 years in a prison camp in Vietnam, so who knows how tightly wound he is, but he may not be normal. Now, John McCain is a war hero. Right? John Kerry was a war hero, but I'm not going to argue with you if you want to say, well, Kerry took the easy way out of Vietnam. He got shot three times. He got three Purple Hearts. He was looking out for Purple Hearts, how he could get them and then get out of his duty. I don't know if that's true or not. I do know he went to Vietnam and fought and saw action and got three Purple Hearts and got out. But John McCain was shot down over Vietnam and spent 6 years in a Vietnam prison. To this day, he has disabilities associated with that. He's a true American hero. And Karl Rove and George W. Bush smeared him in South Carolina. I'm not even going into Bush's questionable service during Vietnam. That's the first real problem I have with Karl Rove, is the dirty politics. He's willing to do whatever it takes to win. And of course, what's interesting, if you remember back to both the 2000 election and the 2004 election, Republicans were saying, and these are talk show hosts and other people, were saying, well, Al Gore will do anything to win. You know, you got to watch out for him. He's obsessed with being president. He'll do anything to win. And they said John Kerry would do anything to win. Well, it turns out they didn't do, quote, anything to win. That is, they didn't duplicate dirty tricks the way Karl Rove did. 2004, the Swift Boat Veterans for Bush. They actually called themselves the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. In principle, an organization devoted to fairness. But basically, none of these guys served with John Kerry on his Swift Boat or saw action with Kerry. They were Republicans interested in seeing Bush elected. They were funded by Republicans. Bush just appointed one of the people that gave a lot of money to the Swift Boat veterans. He just made him an ambassador. And they came out and savaged John Kerry. Now, you can't prove Karl Rove was behind this. All this stuff has to be hands-off. But Karl Rove is too good a political operative not to have had something up his sleeve. And the Swift Boat veterans was a very effective smear of John Kerry. He didn't react soon enough. People didn't think it would amount to much. Fox News pushed it for weeks, and the bloggers pushed it for weeks. Because there was no truth to it. You know, to this day, Sean Hannity talks about how it was all true. No, it wasn't true. All the reports written at the time out of Vietnam, the reports, the write-ups of the battles John Kerry was in, the write-ups for his citations that officers signed off on, they all contradict the way the Swift Boat veterans tell the story. We're supposed to believe these guys that come out during the 2004 election, come forward for the first time and say, hey, I got a problem with John Kerry. He's not really a hero. That's Karl Rove's handiwork. Now, it's true we can't prove it's Karl Rove. This is where I drift a little bit into conspiracy theory, which I always try to not do, which I guess brings me to my last piece about Karl Rove, and that is that on the left, they see him as this Svengali. They see him as this puppet master behind George Bush, pulling all the strings. So when anything happens, it must be Karl Rove doing this deviously. Well, one of the things that's become clear is that, A, George W. Bush is more his own man than most liberals give him credit for, and B, Dick Cheney is this huge power center within this administration, out of the vice president's office, that has orchestrated a lot of things. So I know he's working with Bush on it and doing what he wants, and that Scooter Libby, when he was there, and now David Addington, who replaced Libby, a little Freudian slip there about Watergate, and Scooter Libby, was working closely with Karl Rove, but these guys, you know, essentially worked together. So it isn't like Rove is this great mastermind of everything. But to get back to the issue of the permanent Republican majority, I'm thinking not. I don't think it's going to end up a permanent Republican majority or, a long-term Republican majority. And, you know, all the indicators are going the other direction. Now, you could say, well, that's just because of the Iraq War. You know, if the Republicans hadn't gone into Iraq, and they all still swear it was the right thing to do, I guess it's pretty hard to repudiate a momentous decision like that. It's a administration-defining decision, so it's hard for anybody to say, no, it was the wrong thing to do, despite whatever, you know, all the evidence we have today. But even if you took Iraq away, here's the flaw in the conservatives' thinking. The first is that, like, when you listen to talk show hosts, whether it's Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage or whoever, they believe that America's finally waking up and that the shift to the right, you know, since Reagan, but certainly since the Republican Congress of 94 or 94, that's America starting to see the light and understanding Republican values, and they're starting to be able to get their message through the filter. They're starting to catapult the propaganda, and the liberal media is not as able to stop their message. All that nonsense. They figure that their side's going to continue making gains. That's not usually how it works. You know, Rush Limbaugh has this vision, and you never know with Rush how much he knows he's talking through his hat, and he's full of it, and how much that he believes his own bluster. But Limbaugh argues that he's not going to stop until every person in this country is a conservative. Well, I got news for you. The pendulum doesn't swing anywhere near that far. I never want, even though I'm left of center, and I'm an independent, but you'd have to classify me as voting Democratic most times, and have to classify me as left of center. I don't want everybody to be left of center. That would be a disaster for the country. But it would also be a disaster for everyone to be right of center. Of course, what does center mean anymore if it's everyone's right of center? But it means the center would shift. No, we don't want to be shifting that far conservative or that far liberal. You know, when I talk about 20%ers, that it's the 20% of the people on the far right and the 20% on the far left that are ruining this country, I mean the people on the extremes aren't willing to compromise. They aren't willing to have fair and open debate and stake out a position, but be flexible about it and work out something the whole country can agree to. You know, that's the problem with the Bush administration. They came in, they won a very narrow victory, and they said, who cares it was narrow? Who cares what the other side thinks? We're going to govern from the right. And rather than be centrist, rather than name a few Democrats to his cabinet, rather than moderate the viewpoints, rather than follow passionate conservatism, they said, this is our chance. Let's do it. Let's govern conservative. Let's go for conservative judges. Let's go for everything. No compromise. And that's why the country's sick of Karl Rove's wedge politics and Bush, Rove, and Cheney's whole approach to governing from the right. Because they haven't cared what at least half the country thinks. And where this shows up most is in the polls that show where the swing voters are. Right now, the Democratic Party has a 50% favorable rating across the country. 50% of the country views the Democratic Party either very favorably or moderately favorably. Okay, it fluctuates from anywhere from 45 to 55% over the last dozen years or so. The Republican Party is Well, it, a few months ago it was favored by 35%. It's now down to, is it 18%? Maybe it was higher than that. Maybe it was 28. I think it's 18%. The point is that the favorability rating for the Republican Party has plummeted. And you could argue it's Iraq, but the swing voters look at this and they don't see reasonable accommodation. You know, swing voters are swing voters for a reason. The far right wingers, and I'll pick Limbaugh out here because I can remember when he's talked about this. Rush Limbaugh basically says that there's no such thing as a moderate. Right? A moderate's somebody that doesn't know what they think, hasn't made up their mind. That is crap. No, I'm a moderate. I'm a left-to-center moderate. And we've made up our mind, and we've chosen to walk away from craziness. What moderates want, what swing voters want, is reasonable accommodation. They want both sides to come to the table, cut up the loaf of bread, and compromise. And when they see one side refusing to do that, using the Homeland Security bill in 2002 against Max Cleland, even though Bush had fought the idea of having a Department of Homeland Security, and the Democrats proposed it, he said no. Then when the Democrats said, you know, if you're going to move federal workers in there that currently have bargaining rights, they should keep their bargaining rights. Bush and Rove and the boys wanted to strip them of their right to unionize. You know, that's one reason they liked the idea of creating this Homeland Security Department, because it meant that all these employees were in there, and you could argue, well, they're like the military and they shouldn't be unionized. They shouldn't have bargaining rights. That's what that fight was about, and the Democrats hadn't agreed. They hadn't reached an agreement yet, and instead of, this is just a year after 9/11, instead of compromising and settling it, the Bush administration and Karl Rove goes into the 2002 election and says, we can beat them with this like a club. And they went in, and this isn't Karl Rove's ad, but Saxby Chambliss, who beat Senator Max Cleland in Georgia, and took over his seat, ran an ad in Georgia right before the election in 2002 that showed Max Cleland, a picture of Max Cleland next to a picture of Osama bin Laden and a picture of Saddam Hussein, and said Max Cleland and the Democrats don't care about Homeland Security. And Bush and Cheney said it. I guess they don't care about protecting the homeland because they haven't given me what I want yet. That's the legacy of Karl Rove. It works for a while. The fear card worked in 2002. It worked in 2004. Didn't work so well in 2006. And Karl Rove wants to tell you that the Republican scandals were the problem and that it wasn't the war or anything he did. But in fact, 2008, you know what? I didn't get around to talking about the surge. We'll talk about it next week. But it's starting to look like people are coming back from Iraq saying, you know, the situation's better. Well, that's all Bush is going to need to keep this going. And you know who's going to finally put the brakes on the war? It's going to be the Republicans in Congress. Because the Democrats, if they're powerless, they're powerless. And if they can't cut off the funding, or they're unwilling to cut off the funding on a narrow vote without Republican support, or whatever it is, they can't get the votes, they can't override a Bush veto, whatever it is, the Republicans in Congress are not going to want to go into the 2008 election cycle with the war still going on the way it is. It's suicide for candidates. You can say the surge is working, but as they get closer to Election Day in 2008, this is a disaster for the Republican Party. So we'll have to see how that plays out, but as you've think about Karl Rove's legacy, keep in mind that his goal was a permanent Republican majority, and right now it's looking like he's not leading them to a bloodbath in 2008. He's getting out before the problems happen, but this is hardly going to be the crown jewel of Karl Rove's career. He's getting out of a sinking ship, and that's my prediction. In any case, we'll be back next week with another edition of the Andy Finn Show. Until then, you can read my blogs and hear my podcasts and listen to my parody songs at my website, andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.